Welcome to episode 415 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker, founder of Avalon X, and author of What, When, Wine. Lose weight and feel great with paleo-style meals, intermittent fasting, and wine. And I'm joined by my co-host, Barry Conrad, actor, singer-songwriter, and creator and host of Banter with BC. For more on us, check out melanieavalon.com and barryconradofficial.com. You can submit questions for the show by emailing questions at iofpodcast.com or by going to iofpodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this show do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a mug of black coffee, a cup of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Hi friends, I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the perfect coffee for fasting. You guys know I am extremely picky about what I consume during my fast. And we talk all the time on this show about the benefits of coffee while fasting. However, there are a lot of factors in coffee which not only determine how much it benefits your health and your fast, but also which can potentially harm your health and your fast. What you want is organic, clean, mold-free, high antioxidant coffee. That's exactly why I created Glow Coffee. It is an organic, clean, premium, single-origin Arabica coffee from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a fasting perspective is that we sourced it specifically to be high in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That is coffee's primary powerful antioxidant that has been studied for its role in metabolism and blood sugar regulation, among many other things. The elevation and growing conditions of the coffee bean affect the levels of CGA in the coffee, and how you roast it also affects that. So we meticulously addressed all of these factors to create one of the highest antioxidant coffees possible. So instead of just drinking coffee during your fast, you are actually getting something that may support the metabolic benefits of fasting. And on top of all of that, Glow is absolutely delicious. It's smooth, balanced, low bitterness, and especially perfect to drink black during your fast. Glow Coffee is truly the coffee I have always wanted for my fasting routine, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys. You can get 10% off with the coupon code IFPODCAST at glowcoffeeco.com. That's right, go to glowcoffeeco.com and use the coupon code IFPODCAST to get 10% off your order. So are you guys ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way, go get Glow Coffee now. I am a huge fan of getting our nutrition from our food and support following the most nutritious diet possible. That said, did you know it can be really hard to get enough magnesium in your diet? And most people are magnesium deficient? That's because, like I said, we should be getting our nutrients from food, but our soils today are magnesium depleted, up to 90% depleted from what they used to be. That means you possibly simply can't get enough magnesium from your diet. And magnesium is involved in over 600 enzymatic processes in the body. Basically, everything that you do requires magnesium. Replenishing your magnesium levels with the Ultimate Magnesium Supplement can help so many things. It will help your energy and activity, your muscle recovery, your soreness, your digestion, your bowel movements, your stress, your relaxation, so many things. And it was important to me to take the very best magnesium on the market. That's why I made Avalon X Magnesium 8. It has 8 forms of magnesium to make sure that your body gets the magnesium that it needs with no problematic fillers or ingredients. That means no sneaky hidden fillers like rice and seed oils that are in a lot of supplements. It also comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. This is the magnesium you want, and it will change your life. I made all my Avalon X supplements to be the very best on the market with the highest quality ingredients, tested multiple times for purity and potency, as well as for heavy metals and mold. You can get 10% off my Avalon X Magnesium 8 at avalonx.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. That's avalonx.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off Avalon X Magnesium 8. You'll also see there my magnesium nightcap. That's a special type of magnesium that specifically crosses the blood-brain barrier. So if you'd like to really up your magnesium game and support your memory, mood, rest, and relaxation, you've got to get my Avalon X magnesium nightcap featuring magnesium 3-8. So again, you can get 10% off site-wide at avalonx.us for all my supplements, including serapeptase, berberine, spirulina, and those magnesiums with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. To get all the latest specials, discounts, and announcements from me, get on my email list. That's at avalonx.us/email list. And you can get text updates when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. Hi, friends. I am so excited for you to hear today's conversation with Dr. Matthew Litterman. We touch on so many incredible, amazing topics. And he definitely brings a new perspective to the role of protein in our diets, so get ready for that. I cannot recommend his Weebee Calm device enough. It is so incredible for helping not only kids, but you, your friends, all the people, instantly find a sense of calm right at your fingertips. It is so incredible. And Dr. Litterman is so kind. He's giving our audience 25% off. So for that, just go to ifpodcast.com/Weebee, that's W-E-B-E, and you can use the coupon code Avalon to get 25% off. That's ifpodcast.com/Weebee, W-E-B-E, with the code Avalon to get 25% off. I love the Weebee Calm device so much. I have one. I've given one to my family members for Christmas, and it can be a game changer, especially if you have kids. All right, without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Dr. Matthew Litterman. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. This is episode 415, and I am here today with a very, very special guest. I am so excited about today's episode. So the backstory on today's show, I met Dr. Matthew Litterman, I don't even know now, probably a few years ago, I think, because I've had him on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast twice. The backstory is I received information about his work, and I was an immediate yes because I was so familiar with his background and what he does. So he has co-authored 6 books, including the New York Times bestseller Forks Over Knives Plan, and he was also in the acclaimed documentary Forks Over Knives. He also authored the book The Whole Foods Diet, and he did that with John Mackey, who's the co-founder and former CEO of Whole Foods. And I'd read that book before. I explored Forks Over Knives, so I was super familiar. And when his people reached out to me, it was for his new book at the time, which was called Wellness to Wonderful, 9 Pillars for Living Healthier, Longer, and with Greater Joy. So I had him on the show. We talked about that book. That book was incredible. It was such a holistic approach to health. It went into all the things to work on, you know, when it comes to health. So diet and nutrition and sleep, which Matt and I were just talking about before this, as well as a lot of mindset and social things. And because when I started reading that book, Wellness to Wonderful, I wasn't anticipating just how much of it was going to be the mental, emotional, social side of things. So I was really interested in that. So that was a great interview. I will put a link to it in the show notes. And also during all of that, I learned about Matt's incredible product called Weebee Calm, which we will definitely talk about today. It's a really cool device that helps you gamify breathing exercises for kids and adults. I actually gave one to my mom for Christmas, and it's a way to just instantly bring some calm into your life. So that's really amazing. So I had him back on the show for both that, as well as his podcast, the Weebee Parents Podcast, which he co-hosts with his wife, Alana. They actually both wrote the Wellness to Wonderful as well. That was a lot. Matt, by the way, he's also a board certified internal medicine physician, a specialist in something called nonviolent communication, which I bet we will talk about in today's show. And he's just super savvy, super knowledgeable in so many of these tools and techniques that can really boost people's health. So I knew we had to have him on this show. So Dr. Litterman, Matt, thank you so much for being here.
Wow, what an introduction. I hope I can live up to all that. That was amazing.
No, you definitely will. I've just so enjoyed having you on the shows and really, really appreciate your work. I was thinking about this before we started. I don't think we actually talked, and we might have, but in any of my prior interviews with you, I'm really curious. You worked for, what was your position with Whole Foods for like a long time. What was your position there?
Yeah, I was the vice president of medical affairs there.
Yeah, that's okay. So that's like a very impressive title. I wasn't even aware that that was a role at Whole Foods. Like, what did you do in that role? That's so cool.
Me and Alona, who's my partner at work and in life, worked for them for 10 years. We helped them open medical centers that treated employees with this comprehensive paradigm. There was doctors and more time with patients. There was a more holistic team with health coaches. There was acupuncture, mental health support. And then we partnered. I mean, there's nurse practitioners, so different level providers. And then we partnered with like-minded healthcare systems that were focusing on optimizing health and well-being and minimizing over-treatment and all the harmful, unnecessary care that happens in a lot of the conventional healthcare systems. And then we would get specialists that also were focused on dealing with the over-treatment problem. A lot of people think the key to getting good specialists is someone that knows about the obscure diagnosis. But more often than not, the bigger problem is finding specialists that don't over-treat, which can only hurt people and doesn't help them. So it was trying to put together a network. We helped them create an insurance plan that incentivized this type of care and put all that together with them.
Wow. Okay. That is so cool. By the over-treating, do you mean specialists where it's like if you have a hammer, everything's a nail, like they see the thing everywhere, or actually over-treating once they diagnose it?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that like blood pressure, let's use blood pressure for an example. They'll give you way too much medication to try and get your number low and make your number look normal. But data shows that if you try to give someone a normal looking blood pressure number with medication, you actually can increase strokes, heart attacks, and death. So if your blood pressure is really high, medication is great to get it down as far as decreasing strokes. If it's, getting it a little bit lower, but getting it to look normal would be considered over-treatment because the data shows that it can't help you. It only hurts you. But everybody thinks a normal number means normal health. And if you're getting normal numbers with medication and not diet and lifestyle, then that's actually harmful. So that would be an example. There's a screening for cancer, a lot of screenings. There's harms that are not explained. So we inflate the benefit of screening and we underrepresent the harms from screening so that people can't make an informed decision. So there's two. Back surgery is another one. Way too much happening. Using back surgery to treat pain doesn't work. And yet millions and millions of dollars are spent on doing that to patients who just feel terrible and it doesn't help them.
Wow. Statins, would that be one maybe?
Statins for secondary prevention, like if you've had heart attacks or strokes, the data is pretty good. But a lot of people take statins and think, oh, my cholesterol number is down. I'm good. I can eat whatever I want because I'm on the statin. And it doesn't work that way. So just because you have a normal cholesterol number with a statin doesn't mean you have the health of someone who has a normal number because of diet and lifestyle. So they do benefit people, particularly if they've had a heart attack or stroke or something like that before. But it's definitely not. It's to me, it's something you do as an adjunct, not the primary focus of the treatment.
Yeah, that actually happened to my friend yesterday. He had a heart attack and he didn't see it coming at all. And he had completely normal cholesterol levels.
And that's the thing we'll tell people. We'll say, we don't know what normal is for you. I know what your normal is when I put you on a whole food plant-based diet and some exercise. And after 6 to 12 weeks, I see what your cholesterol does. Because I've had people who have a cholesterol of 200 and they go down to 180 on these diet and lifestyles. And that's a normal cholesterol for them. I've had people that are 140 total cholesterol and they get down to a 90. So 140, even though for most people they'd say that's great, for this person on the American diet with a 140, they actually needed to be down at 90. So it's an indicator. It's not a definition of health. It's an indicator of how your health is doing. Given the other circumstances, though, you need to take those into account.
To clarify, that was for the employees at Whole Foods that could engage with it?
Yes, that was for the employees, correct.
That's so cool. Did that continue on after you left?
It was great. It showed a 20% reduction in healthcare cost, healthcare spend. And then it was Whole Foods was bought by Amazon and it's just a big company. And they started expanding it. When we left, it was sort of, we showed that the pilots worked and they wanted to expand it. But me and Alona were not as excited about just reproduction. We wanted to be more in the creative side of things and adding to it. And we also wanted to expand into what we call connection medicine. And basically, once Amazon came and some other things started changing, we decided to go out and do what we wanted to do, but do it on our own so we didn't have to work within the confines of a big corporation and legal systems and things like that. So now I think Amazon, it's so big, they wanted something that they could create and spread very quickly. And this was more grassroots. So I don't know if they continued it in any capacity, but we left 5 years ago. So I'm not sure what's happened since then.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm super curious just because I've been a Whole Foods girl for quite a while. And it's been interesting to see, especially with the Amazon merger and the change and everything. It's been interesting to see it. It's definitely, I appreciate now that I can use all my Amazon benefits, and it's actually helped, it seems, some prices and things like that. I always wonder what's happening behind the scenes, though, with everything. So very interesting. Okay. So you hinted at it a lot, which is that there's so much to health beyond just like diet and beyond just, you know, what you see in your blood work and things like that. Before we get more into that, I am super curious, since this is the Intermittent Fasting Podcast, what are your thoughts? Because you come from a whole food, plant-based diet approach to health and wellness. What are your thoughts on intermittent fasting for health?
I think the most important thing is that you eat whole plant foods and you minimize or eliminate the processed foods. And that includes extracted added oils, extracted added sweeteners, added sodium as much as possible. And the same thing with animal products. You don't have to be, for a majority of chronic illnesses, you don't have to be vegan, but we eat way too many animal products. And there's a lot of reasons that eating no animal products can be a good thing. But regardless of what you decide to do on that pendulum, people have to eat significantly less animal products. I don't know what your thoughts are, Melanie, on animal products, or what your audience, do you have a sense of what your audience's view is on animal products?
Yeah, I was just thinking how I'm excited to be having this conversation, because I feel like the majority of the guests that come on are often in like the paleo or, you know, keto type world. And then my former co-host and my current co-host, we're all very big supporters. So I like to say that I am dietary agnostic. I'm dietary agnostic in that I think people can follow diets that work for them. So some people do well on vegan. I think a lot of people struggle to get enough protein or certain forms of nutrients that might be higher in animal-based foods. Some people do really well on a more animal-based diet. Some people do well on, you know, a very omnivore type approach. So I think it's about finding the diet that works for you. But then I think when you step back from that, there are some key tenets that apply. So, and you probably just said all of them, like whole foods. So, you know, cutting out these processed foods, avoiding these additives, this added, you know, sugar and flavors and added sodium and just all these different additives and preservatives, just not good. And then, oh yeah, the third thing is I do think it's really important to focus on protein. So that's why I'm really excited to hear your thoughts on protein, because I think people get very confused, especially on this show, because we talk all the time about the importance of protein. How do you feel about protein intake?
My view on protein is probably going to upset most of your viewers. So I'm trying to make sure that I say clearly up front is that you know what feels best for your body. And when I work with clients, ultimately, that's what I want to do, is help them check into their bodies and see what feels good. And then I also want them to isolate the variables. So sometimes they make a conclusion because they have confounding variables or there's confusion. For example, some people who start on a plant-based diet, the calorie density is significantly lower. So they can go from 2,000 calories per pound to 500 calories per pound, which is a quarter of the calories per pound of food. And if you try to eat the same portion sizes over a period of days, you'll start to have calorie deficiency and you'll feel lower energy and fatigue and cravings. And then they'll go out and they'll say, it must be the protein. I need animal protein. And then they'll go out and eat a big burger, which is like a calorie bolus. And then they feel better. And they say, see, it was the animal products. And what I have to explain to them is you can eat animal products if you want, but what helped you there was the calorie bolus. And we need to adjust your diet to deal with the calorie deficiency It's not an animal protein deficiency. And then they can still choose to eat animal products, but I want them to do it for the reasons, for the right reasons, if you will. Does that make sense? So I want to make sure people have information. They take that information, can make an informed decision about what works best for them. So with that caveat, I tell people that protein should be the last thing you worry. It's the first thing everybody's worried about. For me, it's the last thing. In fact, I'm working on ways to get less protein because I eat a whole food plant-based diet. I'm getting excessive amounts of protein. And when we're talking about protein, what we really care about is the essential amino acids. And I'm blowing away if because of my diet is full of whole foods, there's no added oils and sugars, which are, those are actually devoid of protein. Oils and sugars give you calories without any protein. So if your diet has a lot of oil and sugar, you can start to get, it's still probably hard, but you can still, you're definitely getting a significant portion of calories without any protein. I don't have that problem because all my calories come with essential amino acids because I'm getting them from whole plant foods. So the problem with too much protein is that you don't store it. It doesn't magically, you know, get stored in the body. It doesn't, you know, you can't eat protein and all of a sudden gets pushed into your biceps. It's floating around and your body eliminates it. So and that puts stress on the bones and the kidneys and the liver. And the more protein you have that you don't need, the more your body has to work to eliminate it. And then I have a whole slideshow that I take people through to show them how they determined what is the minimum safe requirements. And then what they do is they put a buffer in there. So the minimum, like different organizations that have recommendations for protein for populations, they put a safety buffer in there because each person's a little bit different, but they put something in the, you know, so they'll double the amount that made that the person who had the biggest protein requirement of the group in a test study, they would double that amount. So that's more than double what most people need. So if you're getting what's quote unquote the minimum requirement, you're still getting a safety buffer of twice as much as you need. So knowing that, even if you're getting you're just meeting the minimum requirements, you're going to do fine. The recommendation for populations with these minimum requirements is basically saying, if we make this requirement to a population, almost all of them not going to get into any trouble if they follow that. And that's the answer. Yes, they're all going to do fine. So knowing that, if I'm working out more, I'm going to eat more calories because I'm going to be hungrier and because I'm burning more calories. And when I eat more calories, guess what? If they're whole plant foods and not oil or sugar, I'm getting more protein. So if I work harder and spend more energy, I'm going to eat more calories and I'm going to get more protein.
I so appreciate this conversation. And I think it's really helpful because what's really important to me in life is to interview and talk to people of all different perspectives, because if not, I think we get really siloed and it can be hard to know if we're being biased or cherry picking or whatever it may be. So I really appreciate having this conversation. So the first point you made, I want to communicate that I understand it and I see it go the other way as well. So you made the example of how people, you know, might be needing calories. So they eat a burger and then they think it was like the protein that, you know, made them feel better, but really they just needed the calories. I feel like that happens. And then I feel like it also happens on the flip side where people might cut out, maybe they go completely plant-based or vegan and they cut out everything and they feel massively better. And so then they think that going that restrictive on plant-based only was what it was, but maybe it was cutting out all these other things. And then in the future, they might need to bring back selectively some animal-based products if they need certain nutrients that they're not able to get enough of. So I feel like it can happen both ways.
What are those nutrients that people are worried about, would you say? Because I think they can, I think people can add some animal products back and still be healthy. But what other than B12, what nutrient would you say that people can only get if they eat animal products?
Well, so the only one that they can, quote, I guess, only get would be, like you said, B12, but then people can have like spirulina or...
Which just to clarify, people, B12 comes from bacteria and the animals get the bacteria and make the B, and then they accumulate the B12. So animal products are basically like a supplement. It's not like the animals make the B12 either. So to me, just when people, I just wanted to add this in about the B12. that it's made by bacteria. And then we could either get that from a supplement that stores this B12, or we could get it from an animal product that stores B12, or we could, I guess, potentially stop eating really, really clean food and maybe get some B12 that way. Just to clarify, because when I said B12, I just wanted to make it clear that for anyone listening, that I'm not saying that they can only get that from animal products or that animal products are producing it.
Right. And kind of the same way, like meat from animals, they ate grass and turned it into meat. So similar concept, actually.
Right. There's eating. I just want to make sure vegans don't hear this and say, oh, I could eat lettuce and I'll get my B12. Like if you're vegan, they're going to get into trouble without a B12 supplement. So just to be careful that, yes, if you're eating animal products, sometimes they even need to supplement B12. Even eating animal products isn't enough for some people. But yeah, you definitely need to supplement B12. You can't get that. Even if you don't wash your lettuce, it's not enough.
Yeah, and I'll do a shout out for my spirulina because it's super high in B12 and it is vegan. So there is a solution for people
who don't want to eat animals or take pills. Yeah.
The other nutrients I'd be thinking, I think there's quite a few nutrients that are just easier for people to get and assimilate in the plant-based form. So EPA, DHA, so with their omega-3s, getting them in the plant, that like from fish compared to converting it from ALA and plant. Some people genetically might not have the best conversion there. And then with a lot of fat, soluble vitamins are easier to get in from animal products. Creatine from animal products and protein. I think, you know, if you are going and getting just direct animal meat, like lean protein, you're getting those amino acids in a form that I think will be a lot better for stimulating. I know it's ironic because we're talking about anti-aging and reducing protein for reducing IGF-1 and reducing mTOR and increasing AMPK for longevity. But when you're intentionally in the growth state and wanting to support muscle mass and support building your body, I think a lot of people can assimilate and get that better from animal-based protein, easier for them. Depending, and a lot of it depends on your gut microbiome, like how good they are at what they do with plants or not.
Yeah, I mean, people can, if your goal is to stimulate growth, it's a different goal than if your goal is health. And I think at that point, like you're saying, maybe you want to do, you know, if you manipulate the diet, I mean, taking isolated protein powder is going to stimulate IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor, which is going to stimulate growth. You know, getting hormones that are in your animal products is going to stimulate growth. So there's different ways we can stimulate growth, but I'm helping people. If you're trying to avoid cancer, stimulation of growth is something you want to avoid as well. So it's just a matter of balancing, like, hey, what's your priority? And then helping people meet their needs around that priority. Because I don't want to come across like I'm saying this is the right way to do it and everything else is wrong. It's really important to check in with people, what they want and what works for them. I just also want to make sure I give people, even if it's another view, like there's some people that say, oh, I'm getting older, I can't absorb animal products as well if they're from plants, or I can't absorb protein as well if it's from plants versus animals. That is not my experience. That's not what I see in the data. I know people will talk about creatine, even though that's naturally synthesized in the body from amino acids, arginine, glycine, and methionine, primarily in the liver, kidneys, pancreas. So it's not an essential nutrient. Now, if people for somehow take creatine and they say, wow, my life is amazing and it's so much better, like that's great. I just want to make sure that people who feel great already don't say, oh my God, I need to eat animals and I need to eat creatine and I need to get more protein or I'm going to be hurting myself. I think that's what I worry about, are the people that are feeling great that are then second guessing themselves. But if on the flip side, you're having a problem or you somehow you do something and you feel better and it still feels safe enough, you know, knock yourself out. My worry with animal products is, hey, now, you know, it's cholesterol, no fiber, environmental contaminants that are in there that bioaccumulate as they eat up the food chain. And then just the effect of some of the animal products and the more acidic amino acids that tend to be from them, you know, with the sulfur-containing amino acids. So I tell people, if you feel better doing this, that's ultimately what you should trust your body. But if you're feeling great and you hear something and it makes you second guess yourself, then I have a higher bar before I would switch anything.
Hi, friends. I'm about to tell you about one of the best supplements I have ever found in my entire life when it comes to supporting my energy levels, and which also can increase your muscle strength by up to 12% after 16 weeks with no change to your diet or lifestyle just by taking this supplement. So I had been hearing about the power of urolithin A for quite a while. It's a nutrient that is created by your gut microbiome and which powerfully supports our cells' mitochondria, which are basically like the powerhouse production parts of our cells. When you support your mitochondria, it promotes vitality, strength, and resilience over time. So this is super cool. We make it from our gut microbiome, right? Well, here's the problem. A lot of people don't have the right microbiome to actually create this compound. Even if you are creating it, supplementing it can help so much as well. You can get this compound through MitoPure, which is Timeline's patented longevity nutrient, urolithin A, in its purest, most convenient form. I was sold on the science, I was all about it, but I was like, will I actually feel a difference? Oh my goodness, friends. I swear by this supplement and take it every single night. I really feel a difference in my energy and levels of fatigue to the point that I noticed I didn't need naps anymore. This is a supplement I truly can feel in my body, and I am so grateful for it. And it makes sense because it actually activates mitophagy, which is a form of autophagy. You guys know we love autophagy, which is the body's natural process for recycling and renewing cells. And when it comes to mitophagy, those cells are the mitochondria. That's right. So by taking Timeline, you actually are transforming cellular damage in your body into energy. And then I am just blown away. Timeline has clinical data showing that muscle strength can be increased just by taking this supplement for 16 weeks by up to 12%. This is wild. And yes, Timeline's MitoPure is the only clinically proven form of urolithin A. If you want to stay strong and energized now and as you age, then you have to try MitoPure by Timeline. And our friends at Timeline are so kind. They are offering 20% off just for our listeners. Go to timeline.com/ifpodcast to get started. That's timeline.com/ifpodcast. Again, you will get 20% off. And I swear by this supplement, I am so grateful for it and plan to take it indefinitely. That's timeline.com/ifpodcast for 20% off. I so appreciate you're communicating everything really clearly. I so appreciate your perspective. I love that you have this perspective. And I think it's really valuable that people hear all different sides of the coin. I really like the central tenet of listening to your body and finding what works for you and, you know, being smart about it and seeing what nutrients, you know, do you actually need. And we can go more into listening into your body. That's a good segue. But before that, I just have a few other thoughts. One would be, I'm literally haunted by this protein aging question. Anytime I bring on anybody who remotely might have an idea about it, I ask them. So I've had a lot of people, I don't want to make it like camps, but I've had people with similar viewpoints to you that I've interviewed. So like Dr. Michael Greger and Neil Bernard and Walter Longo. And I'm always asking them this question about the trade-off with a high protein diet and IGF-1, mTOR, aging. And then also this question, which you referenced, and I'm curious, it does seem to be pretty accepted that after the age of 60, that people do need to increase their protein intake. But you're saying you've seen some people that don't need to increase as they get older?
So the question you're saying is, do people over the age of 60?
Yeah. I think that's the cutoff that they give usually for when people need to increase their protein intake.
Yeah. I don't see that. If people are meeting their caloric needs with whole plant foods, meaning they're not getting a lot of processed foods, I don't know of a disease. So people will say, oh, well, their muscles are wasting and they start losing muscle mass. They lose muscle mass because they're not active, because they're not, well, there's some changes that happen just as you age. But as far as a majority of the damage, it will be when they're not as active, they're not doing the resistance, they're not doing flexibility training, all of which are required. If you don't use it, you lose it. But it's not because they're not eating animal products. It's now, maybe there's this one, you know, I'm not going to say never, but I don't think the majority of people as they get older, 60, all of a sudden need to either eat animal products or somehow start supplementing protein powders, or they need to push the caloric intake beyond what they feel satisfied with. Because that's essentially what I would imagine would happen. if you're saying that, or not you, or experts are saying that when you hit 60, you need more protein, then to me, what they're basically saying is, don't listen to your hunger signals, even though you need more than that, and or you need to start taking some a non-whole food, some type of isolated protein powder, or you need to change the concentration of the protein. So instead of eating, you know, you gotta pack in all of these beans, let's say. And I don't think any of those are needed or make people healthier, but I do believe there's problems with people as they get older with not being active, not doing the flexibility training, not doing it correctly, or both, and you know, not getting in the sun or getting the vitamin D. So there's other issues, but I would put my focus a little bit differently.
I agree completely that it could be causation correlation with people getting older and not getting the stimulus they need to, you know, maintain, definitely not grow, but at least maintain that muscle. The other thought would be, I can also see the issues that you mentioned with animal products like contaminants and things like that. I feel like that goes across the board though. Like you could have, you know, pesticides and issues and plant-based foods. And then on the flip side, you could choose. So I pretty much just eat, you know, responsibly raised, toxin-free. For fish, I only eat low mercury fish because I'm very much concerned about heavy metals. So I think that can be navigated. And then the cholesterol thing, I feel like that is more...
Could I speak to the environmental contaminant thing?
Yeah.
So the problem with animal products is that there's bioaccumulation. So things like dioxins and PBDEs and also they accumulate and break down just based on their half-lives. So they don't, you can't eliminate them. They can be passed to the baby through the placenta and the milk, but it's essentially you have to just wait for it to break down. When an animal, so let's say there's a grain that has so many parts per million of an environmental contaminant, and you eat that grain directly versus if you eat an animal that had to eat 10 times or 20 times the amount of grain to get to be the big animal, you're basically eating 20 times in a serving of animal products, you're eating 20 times the amount of that environmental contaminant than you would if you just ate the grain directly. So again, I'm not saying people have to eat grains, but if they look up how biomagnification works, that's the problem with animal products. And eating even organic animal products, it's getting passed down from the mom to the kid. And it's just something that it's hard to avoid. And I wish there was a way where that wasn't an issue, but I have not seen any example where you don't have to worry about environmental contaminant, the biomagnification issue.
So there are like measurable levels of these. If you find the best of the best sources with organic pasture-raised animal products.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And you can look, I mean, we'll have to talk offline afterwards. I can show you, there's even graphs where they look at this and they know, I mean, milk was one of the biggest as far as dioxin contamination. Like it's just because it gets passed down for the mom into the milk. So keep every time it's getting more and more concentrated. So it's just hard to avoid. And that's why you want to eat as low on the food chain as possible, or at least have as much calories as you can tolerate as low on the food chain. Like I said, I'm not against people eating animal products. I just want them to know about all this so they can decide, hey, when is it worth it and when is it not?
I'm very concerned with the environmental toxins and especially in the seafood.
So hard to get clean. Yeah.
I had mercury toxicity in the past and that was just from fish. And after that, I became so aware of it. And I think people don't realize, like they don't realize that if you have a piece of fish high up on the food chain on your plate, like you can't see these toxins. So you can't see just how much can be in there. And you don't realize that, oh, if I have a piece of swordfish, that could have hundreds of the amount of mercury of like a piece of tilapia that's way lower on the food chain. Like if you look at the charts, it actually can be that much of a difference. And that's just mercury. So yeah, it's upsetting.
Yeah, it's really tough. And it just makes the higher up on the food chain, these toxins multiply. So the same way smaller fish to bigger fish is the same thing when you're eating a plant to an animal that's eaten the plants. So the higher up you eat, it's, you know, a cow eats thousands of pounds of contaminated grain and grass over its lifetime, concentrating the pesticides and heavy metals in its meat and its milk. Just like you said, tuna, it eats hundreds of smaller fish that are all filled with mercury, making its flesh one of the most contaminated foods. So you can either choose to eat the small fish, which are going to have less, you know, which unfortunately our oceans are so polluted, even the small fish have it, but at least it's not being concentrated when you eat the fish higher up. So basically plants don't store up the toxins in the same way. So eating the lower on the food chain, the fruits, vegetables, grains, legumes, means fewer contaminants. And it's all because they're being the pollution from the environment getting into all this stuff. So it's not the animals or the, you know, plants' faults. It's just what we have to deal with now.
Could this be mitigated in part since toxins are preferentially stored in fat? What if people ate very, very lean, you know, organically raised, free range meat, like very lean, like bison and chicken breast? That might, I feel like that would eliminate a lot of the exposure to the toxins.
Yeah. So even if someone eats lean, organic, free range meat, they still accumulate more toxins than someone eating plant based. It's organic, free range animal still eat plants, grains, or smaller animals that have been exposed to the environmental toxins. So that's the challenge, is if whatever they're eating has toxin, then you're getting, they're going to accumulate it. And since they don't break down very easily, they build up in the animal's body over time, even if the feed is organic. So even lean meat still contains the toxins, but you know, many toxins like dioxins and PCBs store in fat, but they also bind to muscle tissue. So even lean meat is not free from contamination. Mercury is in fish is found directly in the muscle tissue, meaning that choosing lean fish doesn't reduce exposure. You know, poultry containing arsenic used historically in chicken feed, organic standards don't fully protect against environmental contamination. So you just can't get away from it if you're eating things that eat other things. You're going to be exposed to it, but you can at least minimize by not eating things that eat other things that eat other things. So the little fish still eat the algae that's contaminated. So the little fish are still accumulating, but then the big fish that eat the little fish are accumulating even more because they already have a level of concentration just from the smaller fish when they ate the algae. So does that make sense? Like the free range organic meat is better. At least it'll have fewer antibiotics and pesticide residues than factory farm meat, but it still concentrates environmental toxins and it doesn't protect against biomagnification, which is just a natural process that happens in the food chain.
It does. I would like to look into this more and look at samplings. I'm curious what this practically looks like, because I understand what you're saying, that it's still in there if we choose the best of the best. I would like to like just actually see the numbers of what that practically looks like, just because I don't have that data.
No, it's a good exercise, because then you can make an informed decision about how much you want to eat. I mean, we're all getting chemicals. We're all getting stuff from our environment. That's why we want to optimize our immune system. It's going to be taking hits every day from all different, you know, from the air we breathe, the water we drink. So you just try to minimize the hits and you decide what's worth it. And you know, certain meals, certain dishes, certain types of food really bring a lot of joy and pleasure to people. So it's more a matter of understanding all this stuff and then making an informed decision about what works for you.
And just for the cholesterol piece, I wouldn't be concerned about dietary cholesterol in animal products, raising cholesterol. I would be more for me the saturated fat, which you could get from plants as well.
This is a common thing that people say, and I've learned over the years to not spend a lot of energy trying to convince people. Like I'm just like, if that's the belief that they feel good about, then that's great. My read of the data and my read of working with patients that they can get saturated fat from eating whole coconut, and it will not affect their cholesterol the way it will if they get eating animal products. And at a certain point, you can keep eating more animal products and it doesn't, you know, we saturate pretty quickly as far as the amount of cholesterol that any more than that doesn't matter. You know, it's like saying if you're smoking one pack of cigarettes and then you add a second pack, well, you've done so much damage from the first pack that adding the second pack, it might make things a little worse, but you know, so you could do a study that says, let's take them from 2 packs of cigarettes down to 1 pack of cigarettes, and there's not much a difference. So therefore, cigarettes have no effect on health. When in fact, if you went from 2 packs of cigarettes to no cigarettes, you would see a big difference. So I think you got to look at the studies. And when you remove dietary cholesterol, it's clearly a problem. But at the same time, there's so much of the dietary cholesterol comes with saturated fat too. So I think they both have their issues. But I really don't like, in the end, I don't like talking about individual macronutrients when we're trying to direct people's health, because nobody sits and eats a bowl of cholesterol or eats a bowl of saturated fat. And all these foods have all the different, I mean, bananas have saturated fat in them. So it's not like you're going to pick one type or the other. It's just, it's to me, what foods are health promoting and what are not, and which foods feel good when you eat them and what foods don't. And you put all that together and find a diet that works for you. But I've stopped over the years arguing. I just want to make sure people hear that maybe there's more than one opinion out there. And if they feel strongly that dietary cholesterol doesn't make their cholesterol grow up, great. And you know what? They can do an experiment. Eat one diet and then try a couple of weeks without dietary cholesterol and check your blood cholesterol again. And do it in yourself. But be really, you know, strict about it so you get a good study. And what I imagine is that people who if all they do is change the dietary cholesterol, which again, it's hard. You can't just eat a bowl of cholesterol. My guess is they're going to see a difference if they go from down to zero cholesterol for a couple of weeks, just to test it out. So, you know, do your own little study.
So appropriately enough, I've done almost that. But first, I just wanted to comment really quickly. I am the same way. I literally have zero interest in convincing anybody of anything, like zero interest. I just want to, you know, explore and hear different opinions, and people make your own decisions. So we're on the same page there. It's interesting for me because I'm really intense with what I eat. Like I eat a very strict whole foods based diet, and it's really just a few similar foods, no additives, meat, fruit, cucumbers, things like that. But point being is what I currently am eating and have eaten for a long time, it's very high animal protein, but it's high lean animal protein and it's tons of fruit. When I do that approach, I have very low cholesterol. So LDL will be in the 40s, total cholesterol hovers around 100. When I make a change, and the only change I make is I get rid of the fruit and I add in lots of like coconut oil or MCT oil, all my cholesterol levels like shoot up, which has been really, really interesting to see.
Yeah, oil will definitely get cholesterol, even oils that are more, if you go from an oil that, whether it's high saturated fat oil or high monounsaturated fat oil, you add a ton of oil to someone who's not having oil, their cholesterol is going to go up.
Yeah. So, and that's like a plant-based saturated fat, but for me, it makes my cholesterol like go really high.
Right. But what I'm saying is if you're going to test it in yourself, test it with a whole food. If you add an oil, I don't care what kind of oil it is, it's going to cause problems. But I would say eat like whole coconut.
Oh, okay. Which I don't like, interestingly. Like I love all foods and I don't know why.
But I would say do the study with whole foods. So do a study that's high saturated fat, that's a whole food, not even coconut milk. Do the whole coconut with the fiber and all the other stuff that comes with it, and compare that to an animal product that's high in dietary cholesterol, and then compare that to a diet that's whole food plant-based without concentrated saturated fat or concentrated cholesterol, and do that experiment for a couple of weeks. Do a before and after. Everything else controlled, if you're interested.
Controlled dietary studies are, like you said, so difficult because you can't really isolate one nutrient. No, well, okay, that was fun. So now, it's funny, we get a lot of feedback from listeners and they're always like, I'm so confused because, you know, I hear this one thing and then I hear another, and I agree that it can be really confusing, but I like to see it all as benefit. Like it's more information of things that can potentially make you feel better. So like Matt's saying, and I'm saying, you have to experiment for yourself and do your labs and see how you feel. It sounds like though we do have a few overlying, you know, things we believe, which is whole foods based, removing these processed foods, you know, focusing on minimizing the environmental toxins as much as we can.
Eat as low on the food chain as you can, eat as much whole food as you can, which includes not having added oils and added sugars and So whole food as close to its original form as possible. And then, I mean, I don't know where you stand, but I think if you're going to eat animal products, make them count. So, but maybe, again, I don't know where you are on that as far as like how much do you really need? Are you for, like, and then most importantly, check in with your body. Eat these whole plant foods, add whole animal foods if that's important to you, and then check in with your body. And then if you're going to do an experiment, really isolate the variable. So if you want to see how you feel with animal products versus or more versus less or oil versus no oil, make sure everything else is the same for that 2-week period so you can really isolate the variable.
So actually going to the make it count part, we kind of do overlap indirectly. It's kind of a weavy path to get there, but you were talking about the for the anti-aging benefits, you know, not having this abundance of protein. And it's ironic because on this show, we talk about the importance of protein, or a lot of people eat like a moderate to high protein diet. But by pairing it with fasting, it's actually getting to the same end result where you're not constantly stimulating your body with mTOR. And I think you can still get the anti-aging benefits. So you're making the protein count by having it in this concentrated eating window. And interestingly, I hadn't thought about this yet, the implications of this, but so I do, Matt, I eat a very high protein diet. It's very high protein, but it's in an intermittent fasted pattern every day. So I fast every single day and I just do one meal a day in the evening. And I recently got back, and like I said, I'm haunted by this longevity question with this. And I recently interviewed Dr. Matt Dawson. He is the founder of True Diagnostic, which provides an epigenetic age test. And they have three of them. One's in partnership with Yale, one's with Harvard, and one's with Duke, I think. They're all epigenetic. They all look at different markers for aging. And he told me in real time when I interviewed him that my results were some of the best he's ever seen with epigenetics showing that I'm aging slowly. So that was really validating to know that I can still have a high protein diet, but by having it in an intermittent fasting.
And you feel good.
And feel good, yeah.
You said you feel good. You eat one meal a day, you said?
Yes, but it's over a few hours in the evening and it's, yeah, a lot of fruit, a lot of lean animal protein.
Do you publicly share your age?
Sorry, there's a funny story there. I wasn't. And then CNBC wanted to do an article, like a profile piece on me. And they asked if she asked me last minute, she was like, is it okay if we include your age? And I was like, I haven't put that out there publicly. And my background's in acting, which is where you don't like say your age and all this stuff. And I was like, so I'd rather not. But, you know, if you think it'll benefit the story, I understand. And then she published it and she made it the title. Like the title was my age. And so I was like, okay, I guess it's out there. So that's when I was 32. So I'm, oh gosh, I don't even know how old I am. I'm 33.
So you've been doing this for a while. You feel really good. You're getting the calories you need. It's not like you're walking around hungry. And I think that's what's most important. Now, we all are trying to do our best to guess what's going to be good for, you know, what do we do now that's going to help us 20 years from now, essentially, or 30 years from now? And it's really tough to know for sure. I mean, you can look at other culture, other populations and what they ate, but that doesn't mean that's what's best. We're just making our best guesses here. And a lot of these studies, they look back and they'll follow people or populations for a while, but they don't do this like randomized, well, we have this population following this and this, because it's just so hard to do, so hard to control. So I think the most important thing is that you feel good about what you're doing. You feel good about, you know, you're not stressing out about it and you're minimizing the stuff that we all clearly agree is crap. All of the processed Twinkies and the cookies and the added sugars. And I don't know what you feel about oil, but I think of added oil the same as added sugar, that it's an isolated extracted macronutrient devoid of all of the things that are naturally in the food. So I don't know if a significant portion of your diet is coming from anything like that, but, and you don't have to answer, but that's what I'm telling people. I think the most important thing is how you feel. And it sounds like you feel great.
I do. And it was really nice to see that like epigenetically in real time picture of how I'm aging. I'm on the same page as you with the oil. So I think I really don't see the reason to add these refined processed oils to things. The only exception is I can see, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting data on olive oil. So I could see if you're having like a little bit of that, but I wouldn't douse the food in it. I think I don't add oil to my food.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like, if you don't need to, then don't. And if you're going to use it, there's like the good, better, best. To me, the good is minimum, you know, use a little bit. The better would be like, maybe you're almost like putting it in a spray bottle and just, and to me, the best is eat an olive or something that's the whole food version of it. You know, eat the avocado instead of the avocado oil. So it's not a low fat or fat free diet. It's just a low extracted fat diet.
A lot of probiotic brands love bragging about the massive numbers on the label, billions and billions of bacteria. But apparently the real question is, can those bacteria even survive your stomach acid long enough to actually do anything useful? That's why I'm so stoked to tell you all about Probiotic Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. It uses a strain of Lactobacillus plantarum that's been stress tested in the lab to survive digestion. In side-by-side testing, it showed over 30 times greater survival in bile and intestinal fluid than generic strains. What I really like about the idea is that it's not just about big numbers on a label, it's about whether the probiotic can actually make it where it needs to go. This strain is also associated with digestive enzymes, gut-supporting postbiotics, and compounds connected to the gut-brain relationship. So if you've tried probiotics before and never really noticed much difference, this is definitely one to look into. Go to bioptimizers.com/iapodcast and use the code iapodcast15 for 15% off any order. Again, that's bioptimizers.com/iapodcast and use the code iapodcast15 for 15% off. Plus, they offer a full 365-day money-back guarantee, so there's really no risk in trying it out. Get your probiotic breakthrough from Bioptimizers today.
Yeah, oftentimes people will be doing like keto or low carb and say they're not losing weight. And one of the suggestions I'll make is you don't need to add all this fat. Like you don't need to be adding all this fat. You can just eat food like in its real form.
Exactly. See, so we're on the same page there. I think, and there's just, if you're feeling great, that's the bottom line here. Now, what are the challenges though? When I was in my early 20s, I mean, you could eat anything and feel fine when you're really young, but as you start to get older, your body can't handle that anymore. So, and actually kids will say they feel better when they clean up their diet. And that's, like I said, you do not need to be vegan to feel great and be healthy. But I think getting rid of the processed foods, everybody would agree with.
I think so. So segue, we keep talking about how there's so much more to it than just diet. In your book, like I said, in your books, but most recently the one I read, which was Wellness to Wonderful, you go on all these other pillars of, like I said, emotional health and mental and social and all of these things. And you have this We Be Calm product, which is incredible. So what role does that play in all of this health picture?
Actually, before we go on, I just want to make sure I realize I didn't answer your question on intermittent fasting. And I just want to say that again, it's like what helps you feel really good. I think it's very important. Fasting in general, I think, is really good for the body. And I think giving your body downtime to do its repair and restoration is really important, where it's not trying to metabolize calories. And I personally, for whatever reason, just naturally gravitated a long time ago where I wouldn't eat. I never felt good eating breakfast. So I would eat my first meal at 11:30. I eat my dinner around 5:30, and that's all I eat. So I think I'm naturally doing some, you know, long periods of fasting every day and then getting low. I think we overall eat too many calories. So that's what I like about low calorie density diets. Whole food plant-based diets are naturally low calorie, and oil is the most calorically dense. So someone who's trying to decrease their caloric intake and fast or intermittently, or it's adding oil would be the last thing I'd want to do. It's like 4,000 calories per pound. So that's just another plug for trying to get rid of processed, you know, or refined oils. But yes, I think giving yourself time is a really good thing. But there's some people that if they feel better if they eat three meals a day or they sort of snack throughout the day. And I think that's, again, a personal experiment. If you really have terrible cravings, or you're struggling, or your energy is different, and you feel better eating three meals or snacking during the day, I think the bottom line is trust your body, especially if you're doing that with healthy whole foods. But if you're snacking and eating Lucky Charms for breakfast and snacking all day, and well, then I think, you know, we have other things to talk about. So bottom line, yes, I think intermittent fasting is great, but I don't think someone who's feeling good and healthy and loving life needs to force themselves to intermittent fast if they're doing really well, unless they want to play around with it and see how they feel. So does that make sense? Like, I don't think the data is so clear that we have to tell people, if you're not doing it, you are in serious trouble, but it might be something that's worth exploring.
I agree. Completely makes sense. And it might come as a surprise to people, since I have a show called the Intermittent Fasting Podcast, but I feel the same way, that I think it's a tool that works really, really well for a lot of people, and it can be a major game changer. And some people in the end, it's just not the thing for them. I definitely don't think everybody needs to be doing it, but I do think it can benefit a lot of people. So
yeah. And I say, try it too. Like, you have nothing to lose. What's the worst thing? You skip breakfast and, you know, see what happens. Like, I love that trying. And I, that's how I do everything. I just experiment on myself. I see how I feel. What do I like? What do I not like? And I wish more people, in fact, that could segue into this other stuff. To me, that's one of the biggest things that I have to help people with, is connecting to their own bodies and using their internal value system and their internal felt experience to direct what works and what doesn't work, instead of looking outside and having these external markers of success and health and then trying to live up to those. So it's really retuning our ability to check back in with our body and let their inner wisdom guide them.
Yes, I love this so much. And so practically, what does that look like? And a lot of what you do, and I'm so grateful. I love that you are, you know, creating this education, spreading this awareness, products, books, all the things for people, but you also have, you also have a big focus on raising the next generation. So, you know, instilling this mindset and helping, you know, being a parent and helping kids. There's so many ways we could go with this. I guess I'll just start with a really basic question. When did you launch your We Be Calm product?
So the We Be Calm, which I love this tool. We created it to help people learn how to regulate their nervous system. And we came up with this idea probably 4 or 5 years ago. I've been thinking about it for a long time, but over the last 5 years, we started figuring out how to design it and make it work and then put it together and market it. And the reason this is so important is that regulating your nervous system which basically means turning on the parasympathetics and telling the sympathetics they can take a break. So parasympathetics are natural calming. That's how we can turn on rest and digest and reproduce functions. The sympathetics are your fight, flight, freeze, faint, when there's a danger or threat. And we don't want to have those on unless we really need them on. And many people struggle to turn on their parasympathetics and sort of put a brake on the sympathetics. And breathing, particularly slow, prolonged exhalation, is one of the best ways to turn on the parasympathetics. And that's when we said, let's create a device that you can only exhale through slowly. It's not comfortable to try and blow out fast, along with an indicator that holds a ball aloft as long as you're exhaling, so you can try and keep that ball aloft for 10 seconds. So then we said, and there's a little bit of white noise that comes out for auditory regulation. So you have three different pathways that stimulate parasympathetics. You have the slow exhalation with the tube. You have the feedback device where you have focused attention on the ball, and it triggers similar pathways as all the mindfulness practices. And then you have the white noise that comes out the back, the auditory regulation feedback. And you put all those together and you're activating three different pathways to turn on the parasympathetics. And I tell people, put that by your nightstand and do 5 breaths, 5 exhalations, 5 repetitions before bed. You can do another set of 5 if you want, and do it every night. And the key is doing it every night for months. And after that, you start to build this muscle memory, these neural pathways, neural networks that are created that are basically linked from your breath to turning on calm. And then at any point during the day, you can say, oh, I'm just going to take a Weeby breath. And you do that exhalation, and your body now trained by this tool that's giving you feedback of what a correct Weeby breath is. Then if you take that same breath at any time during the day, you now have this strong neural pathway that can immediately turn on calm. That's been super exciting because it works really well for kids and adults. And you can, and you just have to do it before bed every night, and you'll see some amazing results.
Yeah, I love this so much because there's so much stress in our world, and there's a lot of different ways that you can approach it. So, you know, bottom up versus top down. And so things like meditation and doing, you know, mental exercises and therapy can be really helpful. And at the same time, you can use devices like this where you can literally, like you said, instantly turn on this parasympathetic state. So, well, first of all, demographics wise, so is it mostly kids using it, or are you saying for like us adults and parents and such and people in general to use it as well?
Oh, everybody. It's marketed towards children because that was the easiest demographic to target. But my kids and I use it before bed every night. And it's really amazing. My daughter, who's 11, called me from school hysterically crying. I couldn't even understand her. And I said to her, hey, I'm hearing something's really upsetting you and I can't understand you. Can you take a Weeby breath? And then maybe we'll be able to understand you better. And she immediately, just from even asking her to take the Weeby breath, she was able to sort of, I could hear it start to come down a little. And then she stopped, she did the breath, and she was like, ah, so dead. And it was like a switch. And you can't do that if you don't have the training. It's almost like trying to give, you know, tell somebody to bench press some weight when they need the strength versus months and months of training, and then they need the strength and they can do it easily. The key is, even though you know how to breathe, you want to train and give your body that feedback so that you're doing it exactly the way that stimulates the parasympathetics, and that it's a practice. And when you see that tool, the Weeby Calm device on your nightstand, it takes 30 seconds, 40 seconds to do 5 repetitions. Probably, actually, if I'm being honest, probably 60 seconds. It takes a minute, okay? But it's still worth it. And you do that every night. It's so amazing. I tell people, just do an experiment. Do it for a couple of months and then randomly try to take Weeby breaths throughout the day and notice that felt sense in your body.
It's so amazing that like it's a practice, but you don't have to have the cognition to make it work. Like it's going to work if you do it. It's a physical thing that you do, and then it's going to have that effect. And then I love this fact that the brain will then anticipate and the benefits will only grow from there.
Yeah. It's a real, real strong association. By doing it every night, you make all these associations, and this neural network just fires, and it's like going down a slide, and you just slide down the slide at that point because you've created this beautiful neural network.
It's kind of like how, even with things like dopamine, we know that when you have an addiction or a habit or something that you do all the time, you actually release those feel good feelings before you even do it. Like once you get into the habit of doing it, it's the thought of it that actually, you know, releases these feel good compounds. So it sounds like the Weeby Calm can become, not that it's like an addiction, but it can become entrained where it immediately will signify to your body this state to go into.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful thing to watch.
So amazing. And I love that it's so like portable and affordable. Literally, it's like the perfect gift to give to everybody. My mom, before, like I said, I gave one to her because before she'd been using a straw, breathing through a straw. And this makes it so much easier to, like you said, it's multiple things. It's 3 different things, not just the breathing. And then you like know what to do. You're not having to like come up with the paradigm that you're fitting into. It's actually with the thing, like it makes it like easy to follow, like step.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see the ball and you know you're getting the ball off, that's as hard as you have to blow. And then you exhale until you don't have to anymore, or at least the 10 seconds. And it gives you this form. It's a container around a breath that otherwise it's hard to know exactly if you're doing it correctly, especially for kids, but even for adults. So by using this device, it sort of holds the breath the way you need to do it so that you know you're doing it correctly. And then you just do it every night, 60 seconds. If you want to do another set, it's 2 minutes. It's not a big investment to be able to have calming at your fingertips.
That's incredible. This is random. Can you use it for things like cravings or people are experiencing like any sort of feeling that they're experiencing where they want to come back to a state of presence? Like, what are other things people could use it for?
Yeah, you can use it anytime you want to, your body is dysregulated and you want some regulation. Some people with cravings, they are feeling stressed. They are feeling their nervous system is mobilized, and chewing and swallowing is one way to trigger the vagus nerve that turns on the parasympathetics. So it makes sense that people like chewing, swallowing, sucking to calm themselves. That's how kids do it. They suck on and pacifiers. And so it's not wrong, but it gets in the way of your health when you use food and swallowing and sucking. Especially when you're stressed out, you tend to want high calorie density foods. So it's going to get in the way of your health if that's your go-to calming mechanism. So instead, try and calm other ways. And then on top of that, we ask people to connect to what's going on inside. What's going on with their feelings and needs? This now shifts into nonviolent communication. But what's going on with their feelings and needs that's causing them to mobilize in the first place? And is there something, a request we can make of ourselves or other people that can better meet our needs so that we regulate, again, getting out of that fight or flight mode? So it all starts to come together.
That's a whole nother topic that I love that you talk about, which was the nonviolent communication. I was so fascinated by it, reading your book and listening to your podcast, this idea of needs and wants and requests. And there's so much there. It's a whole nother world. But you talk about it a lot on your podcast, the We Be Parents podcast. So people can check that out and your books.
Yeah, the podcast is fun because it's all focused on bringing connection and that sense of safety, which is really important for kids, their physiology, helping to regulate kids and connect with them. We call it collaborative, non-permissive parenting that we teach. And that's what the podcast is all about, how to bring that into the household. And it's not that, I mean, I'm getting it right, you know, quote unquote, right, about 50% of the time. And then I know how to clean up the messes that I make. So it's tough being parents. And it's just about doing the best you can and trying to bring these skills into the household, not only for your own well-being, but it really contributes to the kids and what the kids learn and bring into their adulthood.
Yeah, I was fascinated by this whole approach. And there's this idea where you're not forcing kids to do things that they, quote, don't want to do, which is a really... At surface level, it's like, oh, well, then kids aren't going to do anything. But once you get a bigger understanding that, you know, everything is driven by wants and needs and what's being met, and you can talk to your kids and come to a place with the goal in mind, usually where you can accomplish said goal that is needed by everybody, once you talk through what people actually want and need. And I'm using a lot of words, but it's really, really interesting. And it was a paradigm shift for me for at least what I see of parenting and how parenting is typically done.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And you have to shift your paradigm. If you believe that kids are inherently bad and you need to force them and mold them to be good, this isn't going to make sense. But if you believe, as I do, that kids naturally want to contribute to the well-being of others, just like adults do, but sometimes they're not connected to that, or their own needs, there's other needs of theirs that are preventing them from doing that. So when a kid says no, instead of trying to force them to do what you want anyway, try and care about what needs of theirs are preventing them from saying yes. And that's the beginning of the connection. And then you can collaborate and say, hey, how can we care about that need of yours that's making you want to say no, while also caring about my need, which is behind me asking you to do this thing that you're saying no to? Can we both care about all of that together?
I love it so much. It's really definitely a paradigm shift. And it's really powerful.
It is. It is. And for some people, they really like the authoritarian parenting style. And like I said, I'm not here to tell everybody what's right or wrong. This is just making life a lot more wonderful for us and a lot of the people we work with. So that's why we do it.
Listeners, I cannot recommend enough getting a Weeby device for you, for the people in your life, for your kids. Honestly, this is another little hack I do in my life. I like to stock up on Christmas presents throughout the year for people. So then come Christmas time, I already have all my shopping done. Literally, it is such a game changer. So just stock up on these and you can give them as Christmas presents to so many people. So Matt and the team are so kind. They have a discount for you guys. You can get 25% off. Just go to ifpodcast.com/weebe. That's W-E-B-E. So ifpodcast.com/weebe, W-E-B-E. And when you go there, it will bring you to the main page. There's a pop-up to get on the email list, and that will get you a 25% discount on the product. There's also a little button in the corner that says save 25%. So you can click that as well. So definitely check that out. That will be at ifpodcast.com/weebe, W-E-B-E. All right. Well, thank you, Matt. I really, really enjoyed that conversation. It was exciting. It was nice because I think in our two prior episodes on my other show, we did more focus on stuff that we got into at the end. So if people were interested in that, definitely check out those other episodes. I really enjoyed talking about the diet stuff with you. That was super fun. And I really appreciate your perspective. The central tenets that you think are important. I really love that you understand that different things work for different people. And I think this conversation will be really valuable for people in exposing them to different paradigms and ideas and helping them really find what works best for them. So thank you for what you're doing.
I appreciate it. And I really hope people listening, because way back when I remember listening to different shows and I would think that person doesn't agree with, I would just stop listening. And I think it's really helpful to listen to everything and then just pick what works for you and make that your program versus, you have to agree with somebody 100% or, if they don't agree, throw them away. And maybe there's some, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Maybe there's some things you like and other things you don't like. So I really invite the audience, and in general, I invite my audiences when I'm talking to just pick what works for you. Here's my opinion. Melanie, you have your opinion, but you've ultimately figured out what works for you. And that's why you have this opinion. But it's different than probably all the experts that you've talked to. There's some differences in what you do compared to each of those experts. And I think that's the way to be successful.
I agree so much. I actually actively, one of the podcasts I listen to is Rich Roll, he's very vegan. And it's because I actively want to make sure I listen to perspectives that are very different from what I actually eat or overlap, like we talked about as well. Yeah, find what works for you. Leave what doesn't work for you. Yeah, this has been amazing. So again, listeners, go to ifpodcast.com/weebe, W-E-B-E, and click that little button in the bottom right-hand corner to get 25% off. And yeah, this has been super, super awesome. So thanks, Matt. We'll have to have you on again in the future. There's just so much more we could talk about. So thank you for everything that you're doing. Oh, by the way, can you give links for people? So how can people follow you, listen to your podcast, all the things?
Yes. Yeah, so people can find us. Our website is connectiondocs.com. And the calming device and the breathing device is through webecalm.com with a K, webekalub.com. And our podcast is webeparents.com. And then our book, Wellness to Wonderful, is on Amazon. And you can follow webecalm.com on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Awesome. Awesome. So we will put all of that in the show notes. Again, thank you so much for the conversation and everything that you're doing. And yeah, we'll have to talk again in the future. This was really great.
This was great. Thank you so much, Melanie.
Thanks, Matt. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember, everything we discussed on this show does not constitute medical advice, and no patient-doctor relationship is formed. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on iTunes. We couldn't do this without our amazing team. Editing by Podcast Doctors, show notes and artwork by Brianna Joyner, and original theme composed by Leland Cox and recomposed by Steve Saunders. See you next week.